Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that more than 2 million people are infected with antibiotic-resistant bacteria every year, and more than 23,000 people die from those infections. Public health leaders worry that the problem of so-called superbugs is only getting worse, which is why governmental and philanthropic groups from the U.S. and U.K. formed a unique public-private partnership to battle the superbug threat. It's called the Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria Biopharmaceutical Accelerator, or CARB-X, for those of us who have a hard time saying its name. And they recently announced their first round of funding, almost $50 million, to develop new drugs and technology to fight these deadly pathogens. Kevin Ouderson is a health law professor at Boston University, and he's the executive director of CARB-X, and he joins us now. Professor Ouderson, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be here, but it would be fun to be at Fenway, too.
Indeed. All of us wish we could be at Fenway Park. But let's talk about this, the threat of superbugs that gave rise to the CARB-X accelerator. I mean, first of all, just in your own view, how serious is the problem of these antibiotic-resistant pathogens?
When you talk to doctors who deal with infection in hospitals, many of them are very serious people, and they're very scared. This is the sort of problem that's never the most urgent one. You know, there's always something else that's drawing the attention of a policymaker or whatnot. But this is slowly growing, and it's a menace, not just to, you know, the people that happen to get it, but it really undermines everything we want to do in medicine.
Mm. I mean, I was reading that we're reaching the point where all it'll take is the development of or the resistance of a couple key pathogens, and things like routine surgery could suddenly become, I don't know, a potentially deadly affair just going into the hospital.
I mean, people do things like a hip replacement because it'll make them much more mobile. But they wouldn't do that if we didn't have the safety net of antibiotics. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, a cesarean section, right? Would you do that if you could die from an infection? The answer is probably no.
Makes it a very difficult decision, right? Because some of those surgeries also you have to do for the sake of your own life.
Absolutely.
Okay, so obviously there's a global need for a new class, a new group, a new technology around antibiotics. I mean, one of the things that I noticed is that the last time antibiotics were approved, or the last one to make it to market, was 1984. Why so long ago?
Well, just to be precise with the statistic, that's the last time a new class of antibiotics was approved by the FDA. It had been discovered in 1984.
Okay.
So there's a long lag between discovery, and that was for what's called a gram-positive bacteria, which is the easier type to go after. The last time that we had a discovery of a new class of gram-negative that made it all the way to FDA approval was the year that I was born, 1962. Let me tell you, it's a long time ago. And so we're desperately in need, because of resistance, of new classes. And new classes is something we haven't seen in decades.
So here comes along CARB-X. Again, it's called Combating Antibiotic Resistant Bacteria Biopharmaceutical Accelerator. Between the United States and the UK government and philanthropies, what does CARB-X hope to do?
We want to find interesting science that's happening in universities and small companies and help to move them along. You know, the preclinical phases in which they're getting it ready for human testing, there's almost no private money for antibiotic companies in that space. And so a lot of these companies are living on nickels and dimes and duct tape, you know, trying to make things work. And we're showing up with significant amounts of money in order to find the most interesting projects and move them forward.
And some of those interesting projects that in this first round of funding, the $48 million?
In just those 11 companies that we've identified for this first round of funding, three of them would be new antibiotic classes against gram-negatives. Again, that hasn't happened since 1962. Four are so novel that there's not even a box to put them in. You know, they're very interesting oblique approaches, ways to deal with antibiotic resistance.
Well, one of them includes boosting the person's own immune system.
That's right. Right. Or another one would take older antibiotics and find ways to make them able to penetrate the double cell wall of a gram-negative bacteria. Huh. So interesting ideas.
Yeah. There's another one that really caught my eye that isn't necessarily a treatment, but a diagnostic tool, right, that would help doctors diagnose within, did I read it right, 60 seconds, a new what the nature of a particular infection was? Well, that's the hope.
We need diagnostics, yeah, without a doubt. And this company is called Proteus, is located in Scotland. And they've developed a light-based sensor system for lung infections so that within 60 seconds they could identify the bacteria and whether it was resistant or susceptible to which, you know, antibiotics at the bedside in less than a minute. So all of this is early-stage research. You know, a lot of it will fail. But the upside of getting just one of these 11 to succeed, I mean, that alone would be one of the most significant advances we've seen in my lifetime.
So there's a profound public interest here in getting these, to accelerate these technologies to a place where they can make a difference. I wanted to follow up with you on something you said a little bit earlier, and that is for most of these companies who would like to do this kind of research, there are very few private dollars. Does that have to do with the fact that even though this is a worldwide problem, antibiotic resistance, the market for it is shaped in a weird way that doesn't actually make it very financial? There aren't good financial incentives to try to make these drugs.
Almost every big company that has looked at this sector has decided to quit. They've decided they can make more money doing cancer or heart disease or any other drug area other than antibiotics. Part of the reason is that it's difficult for a company, you know, or for a doctor to know which antibiotic is the right one at the moment. And so it's not like some other drugs in which you know exactly which expensive drug to take. Our diagnostics are really pretty still primitive. And so it's difficult to find the patients who need specifically your new expensive antibiotic. There's lots of other things that are messed up with that market as well.
So, I mean, in the long run, though, is there anything that CarbX is doing to change those market fundamentals so that, you know, maybe in the future, the next time we need a new burst of drug development, we're not necessarily going to need this model, that we've changed the basics so that companies want to make these drugs?
There is an effort underway. It's not under CarbX. CarbX is funded by BARDA, which is an office within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as well as the Wellcome Trust in England. And together, these are called push incentives. They're ways to push products along the pipeline. But you're right. If we don't fix, you know, the ultimate market, what happens after FDA approval? If we don't find a way for the market to work in that area, then really we've just accelerated companies towards an eventual market failure. There are efforts underway, both in the United States and Europe. In Europe, it's called Drive AB. In the United States, is being led by the former FDA commissioner under George Bush, Mark McClellan, working out of Duke University. And in both of these groups, both Drive AB in Europe and McClellan in the United States, they're trying to develop something called a market entry reward, something akin to a large prize that would be paid to a company that brought an amazing antibiotic to market.
Oh, interesting. Now, what happens after one of these new drugs or technologies gets developed? And I guess what I mean is part of the reason why we are where we are in terms of the emergence of these highly resistant pathogens is, you know, we've gone through a 50-year period of overprescribing antibiotics. We've made these superbugs.
Right.
Is there anything in CarbX's purview that's going to try and stop that from happening all over again?
We have some amazing antibiotics that we literally feed, you know, to pigs, right?
Yeah, like the vast majority of antibiotics are used for veterinary purposes in agriculture.
80% by weight in the United States, approximately, are used in the agriculture and also with our pets. So without a doubt, if we bring something new to market, a brand new antibiotic, a first in class, we do not want to waste it. And so we've baked into our grant, you know, into the contract that we write with these companies, that they have to come up with a plan for stewardship, for appropriate use of their product from day one. And as the product gets closer and closer to the market, they have to make that a more and more complex plan. And here's the kicker. They have to place it on our website. So it's transparent to the world. This is a first. You know, a lot of companies have internal plans with this regard, but they don't necessarily share them in a place where everyone can see them. And so we're hopeful that not just our companies, but other companies in the sector will follow this trend and begin to think from the earliest stages, but most significantly when they're almost ready to enter the market, about how this drug will have access around the world and also stewardship so that it's not wasted.
That's a potential game changer.
I think so. It could change the culture of the way the industry has dealt with these types of products over decades.
But only if the culture on the end user part of the drug development chain has also changed. Like, you know, all those doctors and all those vets and all those companies that are putting all those antibiotics out there, they need to change their behavior. I guess that's we need to change our behavior too.
Yeah, you know, anyone who's had a child, you know, with an ear infection, you know, knows this struggle about what do you do in that sort of situation. The CDC is working hard to try to reduce the unnecessary use. They think in the community, among people like us, it's about 60% is unnecessary. In hospitals, it's something around 50% may still be unnecessary, which is still a shocking number. Without a doubt, we have to do that and what we're doing at CARB-X and something like a market entry reward. This is a hard problem that requires people pulling, multiple people, you know, working together in order to make this a solution.
Well, Kevin Ouderson is a professor of health law at Boston University and executive director of CARB-X. It's a new biopharmaceutical accelerator. It's a public-private partnership that's aiming to help develop the next generation of antibiotics to fight so-called superbugs. Kevin Ouderson, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here and hope no one ever needs one of these new drugs.
Likewise. Well, let's turn now to a different kind of public health crisis, that having to do with opioid abuse and addiction. Public restrooms have become ground zero in the opioid battle as one of the few places where people find privacy to inject. But it's also creating a lot of tension, from needles clogging toilets in fast food restaurants, libraries, and town halls, to nervousness among workers in those places. WBUR's Martha Biebinger has this look from Mass Ave in Cambridge.
So we're going to go check out the place we talked about. It's this way.
A man named Eddie guides me through the mid-afternoon crowd toward a sandwich shop. Some restaurants, offices, and a social service agency here in Central Square have closed their bathrooms to the public in recent months. Not this place. We stop in front of big glass windows.
With these bathrooms here, you don't need a key. You just, if it's vacant, you go in. And then the staff just leaves you alone. I know so many people that get high here.
At the fast food place right across the street, it's much harder to get in and out.
You don't need a key, but they have a security guard that sits at the little table by the door directly from the bathroom.
Some guards require a receipt for admission to the bathroom, Eddie says, but you can grab one from the trash. Eddie, who's 39 and homeless, works in a restaurant himself. We're only using his first name because he's admitting to illegal drug use. Eddie is on methadone, which curbs his craving for heroin, so he only uses occasionally to be social with friends. Our next stop, a national burrito chain.
So now, like, this place, you have to get the code to use their bathroom. But if you go in there and sit on that side by the bathroom, if you wait long enough, someone's going to use that bathroom, and then you say, hey, hold the door for me, and then you're in.
So you know which bathrooms
I do. I do. I know all the bathrooms that I can and can't get high in. Even in the train station downstairs, you can use that bathroom most days and not be bothered.
So, but that's not good in some ways, right?
It's not good at all, because who's keeping an eye on them? That's why you have to have somebody with you to make sure that you don't overdose. It's unfortunate that it's come to that, but that's the way it is.
You can understand why the restaurants might be freaked out about this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, these businesses primarily are like family businesses. They don't expect to find somebody dead, so I get it.
But what are businesses supposed to do? Some have installed low lighting, blue in particular, to make it difficult for drug users to find a vein. But Joshua Gerber, who owns the 1369 Coffee House, is focused on keeping all of his customers safe. He's drilled a metal box into the wall next to his toilet for needles and other things that clog pipes. And Gerber removed the drop ceilings in his bathrooms after noticing things tucked above the tiles.
We'd find needles or people's drugs. It's a tricky thing managing a public restroom in a big, busy square like Central Square where there's a lot of drug use.
Gerber and his staff have found several people on the bathroom floor not breathing.
And it's very scary, you know. In an ideal world, users would have safe places to go, that it didn't become the job of a business to manage that and to look after them and make sure that they were okay.
There are no such safe use spaces in Massachusetts or anywhere in the U.S. So Gerber is taking the unusual step of training his baristas to use naloxone, the drug that reverses most opioid overdoses. He sent a training invitation email to all employees last week. Within 10 minutes, he had about 25 replies.
Mostly capital yes, exclamation point, you know, I'll be there for sure, count me in, you know, just thrilled to figure out how they might be able to save a life.
Naloxone has become standard equipment for security guards at many hospitals in the Boston area.
I carry it on me every day. It's right here in a little pouch.
Ryan Curran, a police and security operations manager at Mass General, stands outside a bathroom in the main lobby where a woman OD'd last fall. She survived, as have 7 or 8 people who overdosed in MGH bathrooms since Curran's team started carrying naloxone in the last year or year and a half.
It's definitely relieving when you know and you see someone breathing again when 2-3 minutes beforehand they looked lifeless and then a couple pumps in the nasal spray and they're doing better. It's pretty incredible.
Mass General started training security guards after emergency room physician Dr. Ali Raja realized the hospital's bathrooms had become a magnet for some of his overdose patients.
There's an understanding that if you overdose in and around a hospital, that you're much more likely to be able to be treated. And so we're finding patients in our restrooms. We're finding patients in our lobbies.
Many businesses, including hospitals and clinics, don't want to talk about overdoses within their buildings. And Raja and Curran at Mass General want to be sure their message on drug use is clear. Here's Curran again.
We don't want to promote, obviously, people coming here and using it. But if it's going to happen, then we'd like to be prepared to help them and save them and get them to the ED as fast as possible.
Speed is critical, especially now when heroin is routinely mixed with fentanyl. Some clinics and restaurants check on bathroom users by having staff knock on the door after 10 or 15 minutes. But fentanyl can lead to oxygen-deprived brain death within that window. One clinic has installed an intercom and requires people to respond. Another has just designed a reverse motion detector that sets off an alarm if there's no movement in the bathroom. During an epidemic, you might think public health officials would issue safety practices for bathrooms, but Boston Medical Center's Dr. Alex Wally says no one wants to talk about their strategies in public.
It's against federal and state law to provide a space where people can use knowingly. So that is a big deterrent from people talking about this problem.
Without some guidance, more libraries, town halls, and businesses are closing their bathrooms to the public. That means more drug use, injuries, and discarded needles in parks and on city streets. But keeping bathrooms open by stocking naloxone and monitoring who goes in and for how long is a challenge for many businesses. Daniel Raymond with the New York-based Harm Reduction Coalition says more communities are reaching a breaking point with bathrooms.
Having dedicated facilities like safer drug consumption spaces is the best bet for a long-term structural solution that I think a lot of business owners could buy into.
Maybe. No business groups in Massachusetts have come out in favor of rooms in which users could inject drugs under the supervision of a doctor or nurse. But there is a lot of frustration about how to manage bathrooms.
That report from WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Back in a moment, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.